This is Joe Burns.
And Chad P.
Hey, thanks for listening to the Rock School Podcast.
We think you'll learn something.
Now remember, if you want to hear the show with all the music in place, go to KSLU.org and stream the show live, Thursdays at 5.
And Sundays at 4.
It's a new show every week.
Now enjoy this week's Rock School Radio Show.
Portions of the day's programming are reproduced by means of electrical transcriptions or tape recordings.
It's time for school. Rock School. With your hosts, Dr. Joe Burns and Chad P.
There is also plate reverb. The bigger the plate, I mean a physical steel plate.
Sure.
The bigger the plate, the better the reverb.
Hey, Mom, I need your china. I'm going to be recording with the guys later on this afternoon in the basement.
That's right. Well, we're talking things that are probably 7 or 8 feet tall.
Right, okay.
Class is in.
Live before your naked, steaming ears, this is Rock School on the Rock School Radio Network. My name is Joe Burns, a professor in the communication department, Southeastern Louisiana University. Sitting to my immediate left is not Chad P. It's Todd.
Yes, indeed. Not Chad P. at all. Merely Todd Delaney.
No, you're not going to put a D or anything like that? You're not going to do the hip letter thing?
No,
like,
not at
like
all.
Chad?
I'm bad with the letters, but I'm good with the spelling. Weird.
Now, Chad is not here. Now, this will be the second show that Chad has missed. The first one he's missed because of, you know, he had to move his family for a hurricane.
Aw, gee, huh?
And this one he's missing because he has a stomach virus that has placed him in the hospital.
Wow.
When are you going to fire this slacker?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. This guy, where's the dedication, right?
come on.
Right.
Buck up, child.
Right?
Let's give this kid a shot somewhere. Now, I was going to do a different show with Chad, but you, Todd Delaney, if anybody knows you, they know two things about you. Number one, you love pudding.
Sure.
And number two, you are a fan of the technical side of radio, a fan of the technical side of things, and you're a big digital guy. But on the same aspect, you love and have a great respect for the old analog side of it.
Absolutely. But, man, I love some tapioca.
You do. You really
do. Big fan of the pudding.
But sometimes you don't even let it get into the pudding.
Absolutely. Analog is fantastic stuff. I was in that phase right there between analog and digital, the transition, saw the whole thing. I'm a huge fan of analog. Big fan of digital. You can do different things with everything. Is that what we're talking about today?
It is. I actually traded out the show for this today because when Chad contacted me from, you know, his deathbed, I said, you know, I got to trade you the show because I knew you were coming in here. So for an hour today, we're going to talk about analog tape tricks and how the people used to do it. Because today it's digital. You click a button. I need, you know, an echo here. Click, click, and you get an echo.
Mm-hmm.
How did they used to get it done in the old days?
Oh,
how were things actually performed? And when you start to hear how people used to do it, it's really amazing, you know, how they used to get things in the olden days.
Geniuses is what it was.
They really were. Let's talk echo. You know, an echo is not just, you know, a set reverb coming back at you. An echo is you say something and then after a set period of time, it comes back at you. It slaps right back at you. The way echo used to be done, you know, today it's a digital thing. You place it and then you tell it how many milliseconds you want.
Sure.
It used to be done with what's known as a slap back.
Right.
You used to work with slap back.
Absolutely. Not the same as feedback.
No, not.
A little bit different here,
it's
right?
It's darn close.
Right.
And by the way, feedback, shortest word in the English language that contains the letters A, B, C, D, E, and F.
Beauty.
The way it was done was you ran the signal into the microphone.
Mm-hmm.
Back into the board,
okay,
and then back through the tape. So the tape was feeding itself. And what you did, now people who are listening to this would think, now wait a minute, that would feed back. But what you did is you used the pot, the little thing that turned up the sound,
right
until the tipping point. If you turned it any farther, it would feed back.
Oh.
But they found this perfect little point where it would say it. And then dealing with the space between the playback head and the record head, you got it to slap back.
Hmm.
And it would slap back. And what people did was they got longer and longer spaces between the playback head and the record head. And by doing that, they actually got an echo. And sometimes to get the echo longer, they would have a recording machine and then a playback machine. So they would literally have the tape running. What are we talking? If the tape's running 15 inches per second, sure, or 30 inches per second, they would have a machine here, and then 4 feet over there, it would have another machine.
Huh.
So the tape was literally running across the room. So you'd go, hello, and the tape would go, run, 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 hello.
Oh.
So one would slap off the other one. Hi, space, 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 hi.
Cool.
And that's how they would do it. They would slap the tape off itself.
Brilliant.
Who thinks of these things?
Brilliant people.
Here's one that was put together. This is called Anthem by Rush, one of the earlier ones, and an early movement of the pot to give a slap back echo. Today it's a mouse click. Back then, you had to set up machines to do it. This is Anthem on Rock School. Just played Anthem by Rush, which had a real short, you know, bump, 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 bump.
Right, the slapback.
Bump, 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 the slapback echo. right now there's probably somebody out there that has a knowledge of this, and they're screaming, you know, what about the Echoplex? Or the Roland RE-201, which was known as the Space Echo. I'm going to talk about that, but a little bit later on. I don't want to stay with, you know, Echo and all of that right off the bat.
I caught a film of the Echoplex this past weekend. It was unbelievable.
That what they used to do?
Phenomenal acoustics.
Did have the, and what the thing about it was, it depended on how many gears you had inside of it. Because what you would do is you would wrap the tape. Why don't we just do the
we'll
Echoplex?
Get there, huh?
You just want to go on, or just we'll do the Echoplex a little bit later.
Yeah, yeah,
those of you who are screaming at the radio, do the Echoplex. You know, we'll do the Echoplex here in just a little bit. A tape loop. This is something that was done, and you can hear that. Once I explain it to you, you'll hear it on different records. It's called a tape loop because it literally was a loop of tape. Think the beginning of Money by Pink Floyd,
sure,
where you heard a clinking of coins, then a cash register opening, then some more coins clinking, then something else, then a clinking of coins, then the cash register
sure.
opening, and then the clinking of
keeps
coins,
going,
and then something
going,
else. And it just goes and
it's
goes
an
and goes and goes.
Tune. Yeah.
How does this work? How did they do it? Well, what they did is they found a beat, something like this.
Okay.
Beat of the song.
Right.
And by creating the beat of the song, they figured out how long the piece of tape was for each beat.
Okay.
Let's say it was 6 inches for each. It's never going to be that perfect.
Mm-hmm.
But let's say it's 6 inches for each piece of that tape. And by doing 6 inches, 6 inches, 6 inches, 6 inches, they created four beats or one measure. Okay. So now you do that. You then create on each one of those 6-inch pieces of tape a sound effect.
Right.
The first piece of tape has the coins. The second piece of tape has the cash register opening. The third piece of tape has the coin sliding. The fourth piece of tape has the whatever the fourth one is.
Sure.
Now you have all four of those pieces of tape in a line. Take the two ends, put them together. Now you have a literal circle of tape.
Okay.
A loop.
Right.
Put that on the
reel-to-reel.
The reel-to-reel. And the big loop that's hanging off, you take a pencil and you hold it up in the air. So when you turn on the reel-to-reel,
ooh,
it's literally running in a loop.
Wow.
So it continues to play again and again and again. And since you cut it, so each piece of tape is a correct rhythm,
right,
it sets the rhythm for the song.
Fisher-Price audio editing.
That's right.
How about that?
That's it, literally how it's done. And it took me, what, a minute to explain that?
Sure.
To cut it, it probably took them half an hour.
Right.
Oh, yeah, because you literally had to take a piece of a razor blade, and once you cut tape, oh, we'll just tape it back together. I made a mistake. We'll just tape it back
oh,
together.
No.
Oh, no. No. You start from scratch once again. You can hear this in the front of Welcome to the Machine in Pink Floyd. Have a cigar. You can hear it in the front of a Foreigner song called, Stranger in My Own House. Loverboy does it in the front of Strike Zone. And the one I've been hitting again and again, here's Money by Pink Floyd. When it repeats, think of every change as a cut, an edit. But every fifth change, I believe it's five. I've always counted five. Every fifth change is the loop, restarting again and again. Today, it's a couple clicks of a mouse. Back then, it was a physical loop of tape. That's the tape loop and how it used to be done. Right here, Rock School. This is Rock School, as we talk about old analog tape tricks, or how they used to do it back before all the digital stuff. Now, reverb. Reverb today, digitally, it's a, you know, you click on it.
Sure.
And it says, here's your reverb dialog box.
Right. What would you like to do now?
Yeah. Would you like a room? Would you like a hallway?
Would you like to sound good or bad?
Yeah.
Yes.
We're going to pitch shift you as well. How did they used to get reverb way back when analog tape was done?
This one stumped me for years. How did they do this?
How did they get reverb?
I figured out slapback. I, you know, playing around with the reel-to-reels. Yeah, you can do that. That's cool. Reverb, inform me. Teach me.
Well, reverb was oftentimes done naturally.
Mm-hmm.
You would put people in a large square room that had flat walls. See, this room that we're in right now is what's known as dead.
Right.
Because you've put sound dampening stuff on the walls. But old doo-wop groups used to go into, like, bathrooms, used to go into rooms that had tile on the walls.
Sure. It made like a baffle, right?
You got it. They wanted sound to bounce all over Hex Half Acre, sure, so it would create a small reverb.
Right.
A room reverb, basically.
Now, could you get that with analog without having to go into a specialized studio?
Well, what you would do is you would have them mic'd, and then you would put a mic down in the corner to catch the reverb of the room.
Ew.
Would it be good? Well, yeah, but you'd also have phase problems. The
right.
sound would hit the microphone that was trying to catch the reverb later than the sound that they were singing.
And then cancel each other out.
Yeah, and you'd probably get little drops here and there.
Right.
How they would get it in the studio would either be through a plate, a spring, or re-recording the sound and then offsetting it. A spring reverb was gotten by basically putting a pickup on a spring, a physical spring.
Okay.
What you would do is you would send the sound to the spring, and the spring would vibrate. You know when guys are playing heavy rap music and the car is going, boot,
sure.
boot? That's right. what they're basically doing to the spring. The spring is shaking, and the pickup is picking up the reverb of the spring.
Okay.
And then that is secondarily recorded. There was also plate reverb. The bigger the plate, I mean a physical steel plate.
Sure.
The bigger the plate, the better the reverb.
Hey, Mom, I need your china. I'm going to be recording with the guys later on this afternoon in the basement.
That's right. Well, we're talking things that are probably 7 or 8 feet tall.
Right, okay.
Put a pickup on the plate. Send the sound to the plate. Shakes the plate. Pick up the reverb off of the plate.
Mm-hmm.
They would do that. There was also something really neat that I remember seeing at Sun Studios. They had basically a tunnel that was built, maybe, 3 foot by 3 foot square and 10 feet deep.
Right.
And in that tunnel, at the end of the tunnel, was a speaker and a little crank that would move a speaker closer to the end of the tunnel or further away from you,
huh.
and you put a microphone in it. The further away from you that speaker got, the more the reverb would echo through the tunnel. So somebody would record in the studio, and then you would run it through that speaker in the tunnel, pick it up out of that speaker in the tunnel, and the closer the speaker was to you, the less reverb, the further away the speaker was, the more reverb you got.
Reverb ghosts in the machine.
Unbelievable.
Cool stuff.
And somebody had to think this stuff up.
And that brilliant people used to be geniuses in the recording industry.
Four ways. That's four ways they used to get reverb out of the whole thing. And it was not as pronounced as it was today. It just seemed a little bit sweeter. Here's Willie and the Hand Jive from the 1950s. Listen to the little bit of reverb that's on there. How they got this, I'm not really sure. It sounds like plate reverb to me. To me. Here's Willie and the Hand Jive. Right here, Rock School.
I know a cat named Way Out Willie. He got a cool little chick named Rockin' Millie. He can walk and stroll in Susie Q.
There's a real quick Willie and the Hand Jive here on Rock School, Johnny Otis show. Now, you said you heard something, you didn't know if it was Sun Studios, and what you're describing doesn't sound like it, because I've toured Sun Studios. You
right.
said it's a baffle in the floor?
It seems to be. So basically, you have a hole, I believe, in the floor. There's maybe a basement or so, where the audio that the vocalist is singing to goes in this kind of tunnel, kind of a vent kind of thing, right? Goes down into the bottom, into this well area, basement area, and then comes back out as this really heavily delayed echo or reverb or so. It was odd. I don't know what
studio
it was.
And they picked it up that way?
They picked it up that way, right.
Well, that sounds just a giant open space.
Big giant open space below, right.
That sounds like everybody has to hold their breath when they, you know, when you record, because the moment somebody goes,
right.
you know,
you blow the windows out. Exactly. Yes. Do not cough.
Yeah, everybody, shut up.
Devastation ensues. Right.
Don't breathe. Nobody move. Hello, KSCL in Shreveport, Louisiana. Thanks for running the radio show.
And KLSU in the great state of Louisiana, state capital.
That's right. Thanks for running the radio show as well. Get us on iTunes. Actually, not on iTunes. If you want to get the podcast, you can. But you can get us on Facebook as well. And now, see, you can say you're a friend of Mr. Todd Delaney here, because I don't know if Chad's getting out of the hospital. Can we do euthanasia? Can we vote for euthanasia?
Well, you know, the Asian youth, they're doing their own thing.
That's right.
They don't need any votes.
Can we do a like for euthanasia on Chad? Can we do something like that?
We'll look into it.
Search Rock School Radio Show, and when you find us, that's what we'll do. We're going to talk voice doubling and flanging coming up next after the break. Back in a minute. Rock School. All right, before the break, I suggested that we were going to talk about voice doubling and maybe something called flanging. Now, today, digitally, if your voice isn't very strong, there's nothing to it. You do something called gain, and you say, what, you do an equalize on every one of our voices on this,
sure,
don't you?
Absolutely right.
And that basically equalizes top, bottom, and makes my voice equal to your voice. And
right.
That takes how long to render?
Probably about 3.5 seconds.
Right. So there's absolutely no concern that you're a little older than me or a little stronger than me and that kind of thing, because your voice is much stronger than mine is, even
right.
though we're basically in the same frequency range. In one click, bloop, everything is set.
Set and normalized, right.
Well, the Beatles were not that way. John Lennon's voice was nowhere near as strong as Paul McCartney's voice.
Hmm.
And this isn't something where they would constantly fight. Yes, my voice is as strong. No, it's not. That's my bad Liverpudlian accent. Lennon admitted this voice just wasn't as strong. How did you do it? How did George Martin get the voices equal? Lennon doubled his voice. Also, the lead singer for Nirvana, Kurt Cobain, he doubled his voice. And if you listen closely, you can hear it. What you basically do is record your voice track, listen back to it, and then sing the voice track over top of it exactly the same way. You never get it perfect. It's going to have some differences here and there. But you record them both the same way, at the same level, and it basically bolsters your voice.
So you listen back to it and then go take it again. This is like the Milli Vanilli effect?
I guess, except it's not them actually singing
right.
it.
Okay.
Yeah,
gotcha.
Girl, you know it's true. So when you listen to this song, Magical Mystery Tour, when John Lennon is singing, everything he sings is doubled. Listen to it. It'll be him twice, and you can hear that his voice is kind of chorused.
Right, that's my question. Can you get it exactly right? Were
Never.
They able to go back and tweak it?
No, Never.
Sounds a little bit different. He always sounded a little bit ethereal to me. Is that
That's
why?
Right. It's chorused. Yeah, and when I say chorus, it's just that. It's multiple voices singing. So the harmonics will always bang into each other a little bit, and it'll sound a little bit, like you say, ethereal, wavy gravy,
huh.
You know? McCartney's voice is not. Also, listen to the background vocals. They always sound a little weird. They always sound a little, there's something not straight about them. Why? They're flanged.
Tell me about this.
Oh, I will. After we do something at the bottom of the hour, and when we come out, I'll explain exactly what flanging is. So, Lennon doubled, McCartney not, background vocals, flanged. And we'll explain flanging after the bottom of the hour. Here's the Magical Mystery Tour. Rock School. All right, Beatles getting us to the bottom of the hour. Background vocals are flanged there for
flanged,
you.
Flanged, okay.
Flanged,
right.
And we'll talk about that in just a minute. All right, we are way late, so let's do, what do we call this? 7 days and 70 seconds. I'm just so full of these things here in the class today. Monday, March 21st, all the way through Sunday, March 27th. I believe Todd has Monday. Go.
Monday, March 21st, 1952, Alan Freed holds what many believe to be the first rock and roll concert in Cleveland, Ohio. Of course, it is called the
Moondog Coronation Ball.
You got that right.
That's right. I'm sorry. You couldn't read my writing
no,
there?
No, not at all.
Only played one song, and the whole thing got shut down because people actually broke down the barricades trying to get into it. Tuesday, March 22nd, 55 years ago, rockabilly legend Carl Perkins is severely injured in an early morning car accident while on his way to New York for an appearance on the Perry Como Show. Had he not gotten into that car accident, it is my opinion, Elvis Presley would have been a blip on the radar and Carl Perkins would have been the king of rock and roll.
Wednesday, March 23rd, 1973, the U.S. Board of Immigration decided that John Lennon has become an overstay in America and rules he has to be deported.
Yeah, it's probably part of that Paul is dead thing. Thursday, March 24th, 1973, Pink Floyd releases Dark Side of the Moon.
Friday, March 25th, 1995, Eddie Vedder from Pearl Jam is out there swimming in New Zealand, and then he gets swept out 250 feet offshore. A heroic person comes along and rescues him.
Probably in a small red bathing suit. Saturday, March 26, 25 years ago, Guns N' Roses signs their first major recording contract with Geffen. And then Sunday, March 27, 25 years ago, Sammy Hagar, who, by the way, just stated that he was part of an alien abduction. Wow. Have you seen that?
I'm not surprised.
Yeah, probably the hair. Appears on stage for the first time as the lead singer of Van Halen. And that's 7 days in 70 seconds. Now, what is flange? Why does it sound so wavy gravy? Why does it sound so strange? Think of it this way. If you have one person singing and you put two microphones in front of him or her, if the two microphones aren't the same distance from their voice, the two sounds are going to hit at different times.
Right.
So you're going to have harmonic distortion.
So
right?
We got sound traveling 770 miles per hour. It's slightly delayed when it reaches the other microphone.
So the harmonics are going to not be quite right.
Right.
One sound's going to be slightly in back of the other one. So you're going to have some harmonic disturbance. Actually, it's a neat little sound. People like it. Fender guitars with three pickups. There's a phase position where you have pickup one and three, or pickup two and three, or pickup one and two.
Right.
You use two pickups at the same time where the string is being picked up at two different points. Thus, you have some harmonic disturbance. Flange is the concept of taking a secondary recording machine. So while the sound is being recorded, you have it also being recorded on a secondary tape machine, slightly delayed. And I mean slightly. You don't want a reverb. You don't want a slapback echo. What you want is just, I mean, the slightest of delay, so you have only a harmonic disturbance. Giving you that little bit of wavy gravy
We need better microphones, Joe.
We need better microphones, and that gives you that flanging sound. If you want to hear more of it, think Ichiku Park by the Small Faces.
Sure.
Or this one, Hendrix, Bold as Love. It's flanged almost the whole way through it.
Huh.
And it sounds like this. Rock School.
Anger, he smiles towering in shiny metallic purple armor. Queen jealousy in me waits behind her. Her fiery green gown sneers at the grassy ground.
That's Bold as Love, some flanging on Hendrix. As a matter of fact, you'll hear a lot of flanging on Hendrix records. It's just that that one has it the whole way through the song.
I noticed that. I hadn't known exactly what that was called before, but Hendrix has that certain style, and that must
right.
be the flanging.
And the thing is, when you get a real audiophile in a room, he's going to look at you and say, okay, Burns, explain the difference between phase and flange. And I'm going to have to start talking about a speaker that spins and all of that, but... For right. this little discussion, let's just go with flange for the word.
This will be the Flange 101 class.
That's right. Well, I don't want to get into phase and flange and the difference between them. Let's just use the word flange right now. Next up, the creation of space.
Okay. Does this have anything to do with Stephen Hawking, string theory, anything like that?
It might. Mm-hmm. And in terms of creation of space, the problem was, see, in today's digital... I need to make it sound like I am playing from a mountaintop.
Okay.
Well, fine. You know, you go to the mountaintop plug-in, and it says, what would you like? K2, Kilimanjaro, Everest? Oh, I'll have Everest, please, thank you. And you click, and when you get it.
Yep, God of Thunder, here
yeah, sure.
I am.
No,
yep.
No concern there. Well, back before all the digital stuff, you literally had to create space. And people would create it in just about any way they could. And the audio sound would be created by literally going to space. I mean, you would go to a larger space and get it. From momentary lapse of reason, you know, Floyd's David Gilmour, he needed something to sound humongous. So what he did was he went to the Los Angeles Memorial Sports Arena and he played his guitar into the PA system. And had microphones set up throughout the system.
Wow.
And recorded it. Do you remember the song Tusk?
Sure.
By Fleetwood Mac?
Right.
When they recorded the, as it was the USC marching band?
Right.
Rather than bringing them into a recording studio and recording them piece by piece by piece like people do, they set up the microphones inside of a sports arena. Go! And took all the ambient noise. That would never be done today.
Right.
When Van Halen did all of the re-records for Right Here, Right Now, their live album, it wasn't really a live album? No, the whole thing was re-recorded. But what they did to make it sound like it was a live album, all the drum tracks were recorded in the studio, but actually Mike recorded to go on the album by piping the sound into a racquetball court.
Racquetball.
And then recorded in the racquetball court so it would sound like it was inside of a stadium.
Ingenious.
Ingenious. You ever heard the beginning to Benny and the Jets?
Sure.
Do you know how many people think that's a live album?
I was until now.
Okay.
But now I'm much smarter.
The whole thing's faked.
Come on.
Completely faked.
Really?
Completely faked. The whole thing was done by recording crowds and then laying the crowds in there. And the guy that goes...
Sure.
Yeah. That's the producer. And he laid his voice in the whole thing. And they created the sense of space over top of it. That's the way it used to be done. Find a big space, pipe your sound into it, and record it inside of the space.
What do we got?
Benny and the Jets. The sense of space here in Rock School. This is Rock School, and because every song we're playing is so long, and the fact that I won't shut my mouth, we got time for like a break and then one more song. We're not going to get into compression. We're not going to get into splicing. We're not going to get into mic placement, which is too bad because Pink Floyd used to do a lot of recording with a dummy that had two cardioid microphones shoved in its ears.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And
coolest
then
thing in the world.
Well, they would walk around it with like acoustic guitars. That's
basically,
why,
it was a solo concert for you, the listener.
Right. So that's why when you would sit back with headphones on, it would be as if the instrument was walking around you, which it really was.
Right.
Because these two microphones were stuck in a dummy's head to
Brilliant.
Sort of equal you. That's why when people say, well, Floyd was just stoned all the time they recorded, you don't come up with this stuff. You know, you don't think of a stoner coming up with all of this stuff.
Well, maybe they weren't stoned.
No. We are not going to get into speeding and slowing tape and all of that kind of stuff. You know Bruce Springsteen's Hungry Heart?
Sure.
Is actually sped up.
Really?
The original, you have to get a bootleg of it. Not that I have that. And we can't play it. But not that I have it. But the original Hungry Heart is actually mastered much slower than everybody knows.
Wow.
That's why Bruce kind of sounds like a chipmunk on it.
So like Tom Waits was singing originally and then...
No, but we're going to come back, probably do one more because we're just running out of time. Hello, WBSD, Burlington, Wisconsin. Who else runs the radio
Let's
show?
Let's see. There's a station just west of Ville Platte, Louisiana called Radio Universidad Salamanca in Spain.
Well, that is west. It's east, but you have to go the long way.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, that's through Shreveport, if I'm not mistaken.
That's correct.
Back in a minute with one more of these little audio things that they used to do back when people were real geniuses and they didn't have a computer to help them. Back in a minute. Rock School. Last break on Rock School. You know, we didn't get into punch-in recording either.
Punch-in recording?
Punch-in recording. That's when a tape is playing along, and what you do is you have your fingers on the record and the play button, and somebody's ready to play, and when it's ready time to go, you just, boom, hit the record and the play button, you begin to play.
Wow.
You literally punch in to play. You hear it a lot during solos, when the solo is playing, and then rather than just continuing in an analog fashion, it's like the next part of the solo starts over top of the old part.
And I always thought the Ike Turner got arrested for punching recording.
No, that's not what we're talking about here. We're going to finish up with something called reverse reverb.
Okay.
Now, this is done today with a couple clicks of a mouse. And the guy, Juan, who puts the show together, just want to alert him right now that the effect is right at the beginning of the song we're going to play. So don't have us talk over top of it. We're going to play Hello Again by The Cars. But you'll also hear this effect in the drum hits, the snare drum hits of Billy Squier's The Stroke, and also the drum hits in Sweet Emotion by Aerosmith.
Man, this is the thing where it kind of sounds like it's going backwards and you may have eaten something. Funny for
instead of the drum hit going, it goes.
Oh yeah, that's cool.
All right, here's how you did it. You recorded the drum hit, pop.
Right.
You then took the tape and you turned it over on the reel to reel, so the drum hit's going. And then you recorded reverb on it.
Wow.
So it went. and the reverb threw away from it. Then you took the tape and you turned it back over again, so now the drum hit is back to normal, back to forward, but the reverb is backwards. So now you have the reverb leading up to the drum hit. Pop, pop. If you do it with vocals, it goes, hello, hello again. That's how they get it.
That is wicked. How did they come up with this? Geniuses, or they let their kids play with their equipment?
Probably let the kids play with the equipment. Right. Daddy, I have created something called reverse reverb. I'm going to go patent that. Thank you. Here, here's Sweet Polly Purebred. Go watch that. So of all of these things, and I'm only getting into some of the ones that are easy to explain. Some of the other ones they used to do are absolutely insane. All you have to do is go online and start to plug these things in, and you can see them explained in graphic detail. Mind-numbing, eye-crossing detail. So again, one, don't start it till I shut up. This is Hello Again by the Cars. You'll hear the effect right at the beginning. Thanks for sitting in for Chad.
Well, it's my honor, and hopefully we'll be back next week unless you develops a case of earworms or something.
Yes, I would think, and they will crawl right into his brain like in the Star Trek. This is The Cars. My name is Joe Burns, Todd Delaney. That's it. Class is dismissed.